Are you putting too much emphasis on new technology instead of the people that make it happen? Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
This year's National Defense Strategy contained the comment that professional military education focuses on mandatory credit more than lethality and ingenuity. Ouch. How effective or ineffective are command and staff and war colleges anyhow? For one view, we turn to Paula Thornhill, senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation. Ms. Thornhill, good to have you on.
Thank you, sir. Good to be here.
And you have surveyed the literature on this and written about it yourself. I mean, they have a great reputation, these Army War Colleges, Navy War Colleges, and so forth. But what is the reality going on?
The reality is that they are adequate schools, but they are not producing the top-level strategic thinkers that today's military needs.
So where do the top-level strategic thinkers come from then? Or where do the ones that end up that way learn it?
They're basically self-taught. This is not to say that our officers are poorly educated, nor is it to say that they're not competent. It is to say that for a strategic environment that is so demanding, that we're leaving too much to chance and too much to the individual.
Well, let's back up for a moment. These postgraduate types of courses that officers are required to take, this is not battle strategy and supply management, but more strategic issues that they're there to learn?
It depends. There are two levels. The first level is called Intermediate Developmental Education, IDE in the military parlance, and the second one is Senior Developmental Education. The first one tends to be your majors and lieutenant colonels at the operational level of war. The second one, SDE, tends to be for more senior lieutenant colonels and colonels or captains, obviously the Navy equivalents, that are supposed to be ready to make that leap to the strategic level.
And that leap to the flag level, too, then.
Yes, correct.
And so by the time people are a general officer or a admiral in the Navy, the meaning is that they are no longer specialists in one thing or another, communications or ordnance or underwater explosions, but they're generalists.
Exactly, which means that they need to be able to integrate and synthesize across a very complex landscape.
And if the people are not coming out of those particular courses with this type of training that they need or education that they need, who is it that's ringing the bell on this? I mean, where does this whole idea that the colleges are inadequate stemming from?
Well, I think actually our Secretary of Defense said it best when he said that the PME schools, the professional military education schools, are stagnant. And once again, this isn't to say that the programs are failing. It is to say that they are producing much less of a product than they should produce in such an intensely competitive environment.
I think your article also mentioned some of the regular colleges, Johns Hopkins University and so on, that have the types of courses that are similar to the ones in the staff colleges. How do the two sides compare, I guess?
Well, actually, that's a very important point. A couple of things that are critical distinctions to draw. First of all, a student at Hopkins or Georgetown will actually apply to that program. Second of all, when they apply, they have to demonstrate that they are actually qualified or they will not be admitted. Third of all, they have the option to eliminate themselves from the program if they find they're not suited for it. And fourth of all, they have the option to fail. When it comes to professional military education schools, none of those apply. Students don't apply to attend the PME school. They don't fail. They cannot self-initiate elimination, SIE in military parlance. And they are virtually guaranteed to graduate even if they are not particularly competent. If they have a good officer record, the PME schools will go ahead and pull them through whether or not they, in fact, should graduate from that program.
We're speaking with Paula Thornhill. She's senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation. So what is the prescription here for these schools? What do they need to do differently?
I think the first thing is that they do need to be competitive. The second thing is that students do have the right to fail. The third thing is that the services and the joint staff, in particular, to a lesser extent, the Office of the Secretary of Defense, need to pay attention to these graduates, and the ones that do excel, they need to place them in a place where they, in fact, can best serve those four stars, those three stars, those assistant secretaries, undersecretaries, or Secretary of Defense. And right now, most of that happens through the general assignment process. So a War College graduate is a War College graduate is a War College graduate.
And that's a good point. You mentioned that one of the goals should be to effectively serve the four stars if you are a two star or a three star. And what does it take to be able to effectively serve, say, you are the number two or number three to a combatant commander, to one of the regional commanders? What does that take to be the number two or three there?
And I would even take it down to what does it mean to be a division chief on their staff, a colonel or a captain, an 06. And what it takes is it takes somebody who can intellectually make the leap from that 06 position to that 3 or 4 star position and actually understand what their general or admiral needs, put themselves in their head, and understand the scope of the issues and the demands that are on them, so that when it comes to the strategist role, of, in particular, of balancing ends, ways, and means, that they understand what their 4 star is facing, and that they understand that this is an iterative process that requires constant integration and synthesis of very complex problems, whether it's in a regional or a global combatant command. And the same would obviously apply if you're working for the chairman or the vice chairman.
If you look at, say, something like Southern Command, which has South America, and in the last few years, there have been a lot of political, economic shifts in South America, not for the better. If you look at the state of Argentina, if you look at the state of Venezuela, if you look at the state of Brazil, is that the kind of thing that a regional combatant commander has to look at and therefore get analysis from his or her staff to be able to deal with?
Well, you raise a very important question, which is one regional combatant command is not like another. The demands that are facing the commander of Southern Command are very different from the commander of Central Command, which are very different from the commander of European Command. You need to understand the geopolitical and the economic environment of those regional commands. And then you need to understand what the U.S. interests are there, and are we actually engaged in operations? As you filter through those three layers, then balancing these ends, ways, and means, and understanding that the U.S. military has limited resources that need to be applied across a large swath of global problems, how best do you think about those within the context of your command, and how best do you help the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman then make those trade-offs? Those are just critical problems that need to be dealt with, just not at the 4-star level, but at that 06 and that 05 level.
Is it accurate to say that commanders at the 4-star level and the Secretary of Defense, their ultimate responsibility is to ensure that the military is ready for what it may have to do, potentially, in a given section at a given point in time?
Absolutely, or what the military is actually doing and executing now, if you're talking about, for example, Afghanistan.
Always a shifting situation pretty much everywhere you look in the world. Is there any effort underway that you're aware of at this point to overhaul the curricula and the criteria and the operating characteristics of the military colleges?
What I pick up is a couple of things. Yes, there are tweaks, individual tweaks to the curricula that are being made within the various universities, whether that's National Defense University, Air University, et cetera. What I don't pick up is the bridge between the frustration that I hear that is palpable over in the Pentagon amongst the flag officers who feel like they're not getting the type of strategist or staff officer they need, and how to bridge that more explicitly to the PME universities.
Sounds like something that can't really be fixed overnight or in one budget cycle.
I would agree with that, and it also, I think, is something that can't be fixed internally. It's something that will require external understanding, external involvement, and a very balanced approach that doesn't break the universities. These are the professional military education universities. Doesn't break them in order to fix them. It has to be an iterative process, but it does need to be dramatic. And I think each year that it goes unaddressed, the problem gets a little bit worse.
Paula Thornhill is senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation. She's also director of the Strategy and Doctrine Program for RAND's Project Air Force. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's been a lot of fun, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
We'll post a link to her War on the Rocks article and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.